Tata Mutual Fund presents Wealth Architects in association with Money Control.
And I've been, you know, watching markets and wealth here for the better part of the last two decades as a journalist. But I don't remember a time where India was being doubted as much as we are being doubted today.
The first thing you need to realize that even the best of asset classes go through periods of consolidation, go through long periods of no returns, right? So that doesn't mean that they aren't good. It's just that every asset class has a cycle.
Hello, I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and welcome to Wealth Architects, an exclusive podcast series presented by Tata Mutual Fund in association with Money Control. Now, this series records the ideas, strategies and structural shifts which are shaping the future of wealth management in India. The theme of today's episode is the science of modern portfolio construction. Over the last few years, Indian investors have had to navigate sharp market volatility, rising global uncertainty, changing interest rate cycles, and rapidly evolving investment opportunities across a whole host of asset classes, including equities, debt, alternates, and of course, global assets as well. At the same time, India's affluent investors are becoming far more sophisticated in the way they are thinking about diversification, risk management, and their own long-term portfolio construction. To talk in depth about this theme today, joining us is Gaurav Doshi, who's president and head of discretionary fund management at 360 ONE, which is one of India's leading wealth and asset management firms. Gaurav works very closely on portfolio strategy and discretionary wealth management for sophisticated investors and ultra HNI clients, giving him a ringside perspective on how capital allocation frameworks are evolving in India today. Gaurav, welcome to this conversation. I'm so
thank
glad
you
you're
so
here
much.
With us today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So, you know, I must tell our viewers that Gaurav and I just got chatting before this program began, and we realized that both of us go so long back. I mean, me in terms of Indian media and Gaurav in this wealth management landscape. We were discussing, you know, earlier points where our paths have crossed. But Gaurav, before we get started, why don't you tell viewers a little more about yourself? You are at one of the most premier wealth management firms of the country. But what's your journey in BFSI been like so far?
So the journey has been long. It started off as a BSE broker's son. That's how capital markets kind of has been ingrained in my blood. Post that, went on to equity advisory at DSP Merrill Lynch, then set up the Morgan Stanley India Wealth Management PMS desk for about 6.5-7 years, and then eventually transitioned to 360 ONE. It's almost my 10th year. Set up the desk that we're running, and it's been an amazing journey. And every time I've thought that, you know, I've started to make sense of what the markets are doing, the market comes right back and puts you back in place. But long but very interesting journey and very rewarding.
Oh, absolutely. And then therefore, you've had the chance to really witness transition, you know, whether it's in markets, whether it's in investor mindset, psyche, Indian wealth, the way things have exploded in the last 20 years, right?
Absolutely. I mean, what we're seeing, I think we're just lucky to be born and experience what we're witnessing. I think the sort of wealth growth stories we're witnessing in India are probably once in a lifetime. I mean, new entrepreneurs who are 3, 5, 6 years old today are listed in the top 50 most valuable companies in India. I don't think historically we would ever have thought that was possible. So great wealth generation stories playing across the country.
I suddenly feel that, this was the time to be an entrepreneur, really, rather than anything else. But absolutely take your point. So, Gaurav, we want to, you know, today find out from your lens, your perspective, how market complexities are just changing the entire paradigm. Because we've come a long way, right, when India was being discovered back in the 2005 to 2008 era, and when Indian equities were being discovered by both foreign investors, of course, Indian investors as well. Mm. Since then, we've had multiple shocks. We've had multiple issues from the taper tantrums of 2013 to, of course, long periods of markets being sideways to COVID and then everything else that's followed in the last 2-3 years. What is your sense on the way people have navigated this and looked at their wealth journey?
You know, I think the shocks that you talk about has made one thing clear to investors today, that uncertainty is not a one-time event, it's permanent. So the way to approach portfolio construction has probably been seen the biggest change, I would say, post-COVID. That's when people realize liquidity risk, concentration risk, and why all of these things actually matter. Today, portfolio construction, at least in the very large ultra-high net worth and institutional portfolio framework driven portfolios is more now moving away from return expectation construction to more risk and survivability. I think the thinking now is that how do I build a portfolio that survives first, then figure out what is the return that I'm going to make from it. You know,
it's quite a change, isn't it? Because usually the Indian mindset was all about return, return, return.
Exactly. But it was return, and therefore you always had a product level approach to portfolio construction. You find a product, if it meets your return expectation or exceeds it, it would find a place into your portfolio. But nobody ever looked at risk, overlap, concentration, liquidity, underlying cost, the post-tax return profile. And now, after an event like COVID, when you know a lot of things kind of collapsed at the same time, it opened people's eyes to realize that risk is probably as important or more important than return. So I think the really sophisticated investor clearly has changed his mindset. They are asking far more important questions when building portfolios around risk, around volatility, what is going to be the standard deviation, what is the correlation, how really diversified is the portfolio. The number of investments doesn't count as diversification. It's really how they behave at the same time.
If everything in the portfolio is falling at the same time, it doesn't matter how many different things you have.
It's multiplication, actually, if all of it falls at the same time. True. So a huge evolution. And I think COVID was an eye-opener for a lot of investors.
Oh, okay. So that became a bit of an inflection point.
Absolutely.
In terms of how you need to think about your portfolios and your wealth management. before we talk about products and trends and strategies that people are adopting now, Gaurav, I want to talk about thematically. I don't remember a time, and I've been, watching markets and wealth here for the better part of the last two decades as a journalist, but I don't remember a time where India was being doubted as much as we are being doubted today. We are very used to being the toast of town, right? The best man or woman standing in the room. It's now where there's so many doubts about earnings growth, whether we don't have AI, we don't have companies which are innovative enough. And then we have an oil issue and a macro stability issue and our rupee is weakening. So it's suddenly, you look at so many arrows and daggers being pointed out towards India as a place where you can create wealth. So what do you say to the very recent, it's all very recent, very current set of questions that are arising?
You know, one has to look at, just step back for a second and treat India as an asset class. If you were a global allocator, the first thing you need to realize that even the best of asset classes go through periods of consolidation, go through long periods of no returns, right? So that doesn't mean that they aren't good. It's just that every asset class has a cycle. And the bigger factor, I think, at this point in time to consider is the fact that there is a liquidity angle in the world markets. And whatever we may believe on the fundamental aspect of India, and however strong we believe the fundamental story is, in the short to medium term, liquidity plays a far higher role, but more important role than fundamentals. At time, creating a disconnect between the two. So we need to also be wary about where global liquidity is moving, where is the money moving, because that's where the attention, that's where the headlines and all the attraction goes to in the near term, right? And then we end up justifying why certain assets are underperforming by just figuring out that it could be this or it could be that. But eventually, in the medium to long term, it's fundamentals that matter. So we have to be wary and aware of liquidity, no doubt, but not consider ourselves as traders and forget the fundamentals of the story. So the fundamental story in India, we believe, is robust. We have no doubt in the medium to long term opportunity. And there will be periods, like all asset classes, which are cyclical, that you'll go through periods of consolidation, you go through periods of exuberance. So, one has to really look at what's happening currently with that lens.
So, that's perfectly logical. But I wonder how difficult or easy it is to explain that to the end client or, the end investor. Because if an asset class is going through a long period of underperformance, I mean, India is now close to 2 years. I mean, in September, it's going to be 2 years of minuscule returns. So, what is the sense on that? At a time where money's been looking for other homes, whether it's South Korea, whether it's Taiwan, whether it's the US market itself, and what is your sense on how long this could last?
See, the way to look at it is that, unfortunately, as portfolio managers, we are not in the prediction business. Okay, mm-hmm. We can't predict when this is going to end or when it'll last. Mm-hmm. What we can do is have an adequate framework mm-hmm. that kind of hedges you against a situation like this. So, if you step back, on one level, you have an India investor who's dealing with the current situation, and then you have a global investor, like you said, somebody you can allocate to Korea or Taiwan or wherever it is, right? So, the age-old saying, there's always a bull market in some asset class, uh-huh. right? So, as long as you go back to the basics, ensure you have a diversified portfolio, mm-hmm. And ensure that you are adequately spread, then underperformance in certain pockets is actually something that is going to come by design. Mm-hmm. A portfolio that goes all up at once and all down at once isn't actually a diversified portfolio by definition. So a truly diversified portfolio will have an opportunity where certain pockets will underperform. There will be pockets that will do very well. And it is asset allocation that will force you to rebalance when things seem most uncomfortable.
Yeah.
When there's maximum exuberance, it will force your hand in taking money out and in reallocating, right? Yeah. So even in India, if you step into the situation where Indian investors are, today a truly diversified portfolio across multiple assets would have also been made the local investor far smoother. Hmm. See, the whole point on asset allocation and diversification is that when you experience long periods like this, it doesn't make you emotional about decision making. Hmm. It doesn't force you to take a decision emotionally, which in hindsight you'd realize was probably the worst time to do it.
Yeah.
It forces you to have a portfolio where some parts are always in the party and some parts are probably... So I would say what we're experiencing in Indian equities, you know, probably a year down the road, we'll forget. Hmm. I remember in 21... when we actually started global diversification, for the first 1.5-2 years, the return there was almost zero. Mm-hmm. And it's the Indian markets that were just going through the roof. And everyone was questioning, why is it that you need to go? Mm-hmm. And today the narrative is completely opposite, right? So everything is cyclical. Everything pivots back to long-term averages. And liquidity will create a disconnect, but that's probably the opportunity you're getting to rebalance.
Mm. So, okay, what is your, like you said, that if everything goes up and, you know, goes down together in a portfolio, it's not diversification, it's multiplication.
Correct.
So what is your present diversification framework or playbook? I mean, what are you telling clients to do now? How is it that they can diversify more adequately?
So, you know, that actually... traditionally, you would have had a model portfolio for the type of risk tolerance a client has, and diversification would be a function of that. Mm. But the modern portfolio, especially in the ultra high net worth segment that we cater to, portfolios now, I think the modern model portfolio is gone. I think every portfolio is like a fingerprint. Mm. It is so unique, it's so highly customized, and it has to be so well refined. Because every one of them has such unique circumstances in their own personal capacity, age, risk tolerance, liquidity requirements, etc., that you can't really paint all of them with the same brush. So we start with the fact that diversification or an instrument has to serve a purpose. Mm. And if you can't explain to us in one sentence what an instrument is doing in your portfolio, it probably shouldn't be there.
Okay.
Right. And more importantly, how they behave. At the same time, that's I think the starting point on how somebody should be looking at diversification and portfolio construction. Mm-hmm. And I think after that, you deep dive. The markets in India have evolved, have become so complex. Mm-hmm. Today, the sheer number of instruments, gone are the days of just debt equity.
Correct.
And, you know, just having two things which you kind of move the meter between the two.
I wanted to come to that. So, what are the new exotics? I mean, as a house, are you folks averse to anything at all? I mean, I don't know. I mean, what's the view on crypto? And people have been chasing everything new and different because the standard time-tested equities, at least Indian equities, have not worked.
Mm.
So, what are the new additions that people are looking at, and the ones that you think make sense as well?
No, I think it would be foolish to not leverage on the sort of evolution that the wealth management industry has experienced. So Starting with the basics, right? Today, pure equities traditionally was stocks and mutual funds.
Yeah.
Right? We've evolved into mutual funds, which are active and passive. You've evolved into stocks. You've evolved into AIFs. You've evolved into, you know, focused niche PMSs. It's now about how to utilize them. In fixed income, you traditionally had debt funds. Now you have bonds, you have REITs, you have InvITs, you have credit alternates, you have precious metals, you have feeders into global funds which offer diversification. Now, you know, one has to construct, like I said, basis the sort of requirement a person has, right? Yeah. Today, the just simplifying it and talking about fixed income, but today in vanilla fixed income, assume you are a AAA investor, generating any alpha over the benchmark is almost impossible because fixed income by nature is not designed. So then the opportunity to add a little bit of REITs and WITs potentially to give you some sort of alpha on the you know, on your potential return,
in vanilla debt return,
on a plain debt is something that can be used.
Yeah.
Now, whether the profile a client, it suits that investor or no, that's your advisor and wealth manager's job. How much to add is also something that has to be. So, like I said, it's going to be very unique, but the tools are amazing and so well regulated that we would be foolish to not kind of be smart about leveraging everything at our disposal.
Got that. So just a word on valuations, in general asset valuations, at least here in India. On equity, I think the debate is whether Indian equities will always be richly valued, because first it was foreigners buying, now they're there selling. But then you have this huge flood of mutual fund money, right, coming in every single month. So, and then, I mean, you can talk about private markets, whether it's private equity or, you know, pre-listing equity, private credit. In general, where do you see valuations being a little palatable?
See, I think valuations is all relative, okay? I mean, global markets, for example, are trading at higher valuations relative to the historic means, because now suddenly, you know, certain companies have gone up. So the market will then find a way to justify the valuations. And that's why I say that today, I believe that if you look at valuations, I think in the last 2 years, the fact that the multiple asset classes have gone through time corrections, you've seen, you know, earnings turn healthy, corporate balance sheets are healthier than ever. You know, broadly, you have a situation where you're getting a chance to accumulate or build a portfolio when there is no exuberance. You know, in hindsight, these are the best times. When you are not chasing, when you are not feeling left out. And when, due to the fact that just nobody is paying attention or nobody is interested, you're actually getting a good deal.
Right? So, you know, that, I guess, is the way to look at it. I mean, that is the case of the glass being half full and not half empty. You mentioned active passive in a passing manner. So I just want to understand what your approach is towards that, because and how you see the Indian market evolving. We have had so many passive fund launches.
Correct.
So as someone who's managing money for the HNIs, do you see this as a lucrative route? And how will the whole active passive thinking be here in India?
So, you know, active passive is like having a knife and a fork in your hand. You know, it's not about which one to use. It's about what's on the plate, right? So it's really about what is the expectation of the investor whose portfolio you're creating. What is the objective and therefore how to achieve it? Active passive actually is good, should be more looked like as core and satellite. Our markets have evolved, especially in the large cap base, where information is so fluid, where everything's so efficiently priced. There is very little information arbitrage. I mean, what you can find out about any large cap stock and what I can find out probably at the end of it is the same. So mispricing is rare, is not very prevalent. So to actively manage something in that type of environment and say I will consistently generate alpha is probably going to be a little bit difficult. Now, passive is giving you exposure to that at a very, very efficient way, at a very low cost, and giving you the ability to get that participation. So your beta and market exposure component of your portfolio can very efficiently be done through large. Now, the broader market, which is where the universe is much larger, where the ability to find mispriced opportunities is far higher,
right.
where the ability for deep diving in research and information arbitrage is there, that's when actually active has a much higher chance of succeeding in generating consistent higher alpha, compensating for the additional fees over a passive, and also giving you access to a segment in the market which passive would find it difficult to do. So one should really look at building. So we have the approach of building the core through passives, right? And then using active to generate the satellite. Now, how much of core and how much of satellite will depend on the investor, on his risk profile, on his return expectations, right? Because each of them have obviously going to be, they're only going to be able to do that much.
Sure.
But, you know, given that the IPL has just gotten over, I'll use an analogy because I, you know, that's how client, a lot of clients understand it well. But, you know, passives are the guys that take the ones and twos. You know, the active managers hit the fours and sixes.
Yeah.
You can't have a team with just one or the other.
Sure.
You got to have a combination.
Sure.
But whether you're playing a test match or a one day, the ratio can differ.
It depends.
It's exactly how you have to look at creating your portfolio. You need to realize that I need both.
Mm-hmm.
How much of which to use is going to be like a very personalized ask. There is no template that works for all.
Sure.
I think what passive is bringing to the table is something so amazing, especially when costs over time start to add up and, you know, additionally give you return, that one has to leverage on it.
Okay, so active and passive.
Absolutely.
It's not either or. Got that point. So coming now to changes in clients and investor behaviors and mindset. So you mentioned that people are now not only talking about return, they're talking about other aspects of the portfolio. Mm. What else have you seen? I mean, you've seen the transformation through more than 10, 15 years now. How has the Indian HNI and Ultra HNI evolved?
It's, the evolution has been amazing. I mean, traditional portfolios, I would see, had 2-3 big stocks, real estate, or more importantly, the portfolio was built around assets or investments the promoter was familiar with. Familiarity actually drove how your portfolio was constructed,
sure.
because that's how it was.
Yeah.
Right? Today's day and age, investors now have so much access to how things are happening globally. They are far more professional about their approach. The realization is that my portfolio now is not only has to be multi-asset or diversified, it has to be multi-generational. It has to be multi-jurisdiction. And therefore, you know, the sort of analytics that are required now using AI, the sort of, you know, ability of the promoters to think more like CIOs and less as promoters. The ability to move away from impulse decision making to structured framework, logical approach. I think, you know, it's amazing how they have kind of come up the curve. And I repeat myself, I think all of them have come into the mode where wealth preservation has become their first priority. I think after which they look at, you know, return. Most of them make their wealth.
That would be more true, I'm guessing, for traditional families where you're dealing with second, third generation or fourth generation wealth, right? What about the new kids on the block, so to speak, the new entrepreneurs who've just hit the unicorn club and then looking to sort of, you know,
you'll be
build
surprised.
From there.
You'll be surprised. It's so then, you know, it boils down to your pots. You kind of break your capital into pots. There's a safety pot, which where return doesn't matter, liquidity and safety matters, right? So then the approach they take is like you have buckets, you kind of fill those each bucket. And obviously, no doubt, their risk tolerance is far higher because the time horizon they have, the visibility they have is higher, the liquidity they need to live and run comes from their, you know, doesn't need to come from this portfolio. They're far higher to, you know, they're far more okay to have higher satellite exposure.
Okay.
Satellite is higher return, but it comes with illiquidity, it comes with higher lock-ins, it comes with a lot more volatility, and that's fine. You know, but a promoter who's exited, you know, sold his business is probably, you know, for him, it's more about what is the number I'm going to give my next generation, you know. He's more concerned in preserving, you know. So I want to sleep well at night. I want, you know, the return is there, but first he says it has to be preserved. Whatever return we make. So the new gen, the old guys, everyone, like I said, every portfolio is now a fingerprint. It's different. It's very, very different.
Absolutely. And every individual is different. Their
Absolutely.
Needs and wants and what drives them, their you know, motivating factors, all of that is different. Final thoughts. We've spoken about the evolution of the market, the evolution of the investor. What about evolution of wealth management itself in the AI era? What's happening on that front?
So, you know, it's like active passive. I think AI is an amazing asset to have. Whether you're in fund management, whether in wealth management or dealing with clients, the sort of analytics, the sort of data mining that can be looked at, the sort of correlations that one can draw, it's amazing. But we need to remember, you know, markets are forward-looking, okay? And AI can never basically replace the human mind because one has to have the ability to read between the lines, okay, in terms of investing. You need to understand when a regime shift is taking place. You need to understand when you believe certain policy action is inevitable. Yeah. You know, and these are things that are never going to be stated in black and white.
Yeah.
You need to realize when certain historical correlations are broken because of some sort of global change. Mm. And that, I think, is never going to, at least at this point in time, is nowhere close to, you know, being done by AI. So the future really is going to be a function of massive dependence on AI for data. But finally, it's going to be human judgment that will still need to take that final call. You know, data aims the gun, but the bullet still has to be fired by the human hand.
Well said, well said. Beautifully put, I think, because AI and all the analytics can tell you what the price to earnings multiple is and what it's been for the last 100 years and how it
Absolutely,
compares to 200 other markets. But ultimately, it's going to be a human call that decides
exactly.
whether that multiple, that market or that stock is a buy or an avoid.
Absolutely.
So that's a human call. Great conversation, Gaurav. You know, brilliant one. Thank you so much. And some fantastic analogies there as well. I think
Thank
lots
you so
to,
much.
Lots to think about. And we look forward to more of these.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Very much. Well, with that, we are out of time on this conversation. We hope you found it fruitful and insightful. Thank you for joining us on Wealth Architects. Do stay tuned. We'll have more of these conversations coming up with leaders who are shaping the future of wealth investing and financial strategy in India.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully. Tata Mutual Fund presents Wealth Architects in association with Money Control.